Hello, I'm Fathead.
And I'm Courtney.
From the Dandy Warhols, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Alt-rock legends the Dandy Warhols have been delivering their unique brand of cool sound for 30 years, and their latest offering, Rockmaker, is nothing short of it. To make it all the more mind-blowing, they brought some famous friends along for the 10-track, gritty, edgy, mind-blowing bender of a ride. Slash, Debbie Harry, and Pixies' Frank Black, to name a few. Frontman Courtney Taylor Taylor and drummer Brent Fathead DeBoer stopped by the Life Minute Studios last month for a few cocktails and a chat to tell us all about it. This is a Life Minute with the Dandy Warhols.
The salient point is it was begun by establishing a rule. And kind of our best records have been, or the most successful ones at least, have been based on a rule. We like to have a guideline, even if you go outside it. So this one was every song has to start with a metal riff, a heavy guitar metal riff. And then they can wander off. Obviously, if you've heard the record, you know, they go everywhere from the Ramones to Nick Cave to Sabbath to Pixies to, you know, they all take their own thing on over time.
Yes, it sounds awesome. So how did you come up with that rule this time?
Wanted to make a metal record.
Yeah, we tend to like to do...
unusual metal record.
Yeah, we like to do things that either aren't being done at all or just aren't being done in any kind of way that we are satisfied with. Or we just, you know, we're the garbage men of rock.
And I love
just
it.
So what we, you know, what... we just do what we wish somebody else would do. And we put it off because we're lazy by nature. And then if still nobody does it, then we start doing it. We put out a song before our last not 4-hour Art Noise record, but the previous one to that, Why You So Crazy, was our second and final record on a label that allowed us to just release a single just to see what would happen without any label push, what it does. And that song is called Thick Girls Knock Me Out. That was just, you know, really heavy guitar. And then it got me to thinking, you know, like, well, what if we did that? And then we do that. So, yeah, we just started. I was pretty much alone for quite a while doing it myself. The song that ultimately had Slash on it, I got far enough with that Pete heard it and went, oh, this is really cool.
And how did the collab with Slash come to be?
That was the first one of those great icons that we have on this record. Just the song, that track itself, Help You With Your Problem. I just really wanted that 1970 Vietnam vet acid rock, classic, just LSD tripping in the foxholes. And the discussion came up, you know, who is the best? Because Brent, I, and Pete all are guitar players, and none of us have those kind of chops, or, you know, we just don't have any experience doing it. So who would we get? Oh, who would be the best guy to get? And my friend John Fell, who's a pretty awesome guitar player, he said, well, Slash is, you know, he's the purest of that. He's probably the last of that. There's no hipster in Slash. He is just an absolute genius guitar player.
Super melodic.
Completely steeped in that thing, you know? He's just the best. So we sent the rough mix of the song, and he got back to us in like less than an hour. He really apparently dug it a lot.
Yeah, so, he's a fan, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, all those guys. I remember bumping into Axl Rose here in New York at a party, and I went up and said, hey, I played drums in the Dandy Warhols, and just instantaneously he's going, oh my God, we love your band. Which I was a little bit surprised, but then again, not really.
He is a really funny guy. Nobody knows Axl is super funny. People just don't know that. Our friend, who's about 6'6", was with us and had apparently already gotten to Axl ahead of us. And so Brent goes, hey, we're having a little party kind of event, get together thing. And he goes, yeah, your little buddy already told me.
Yeah, calling this towering person a little
towering redhead goon.
We've really been friends with Guns N' Roses for a long time, which is interesting because I remember being at that art showing with Duff McKagan and
Yeah, Duff's wife, Susan, was a friend. We were mutual friends through Stephen Sprouse. If you're old timey New York, you'll remember that name. So when, you know, when we were starving artists, just trying to figure out how to survive and make it happen, she would just leave the keys to her apartment for me when I needed to work in Hollywood. She was super cool and she was so worldly, you know, and beautiful. She was a really successful model. So I had this amazing apartment. I was like, this place is amazing. And I remember her just going, really?
Well, it's good to hear that they're down to earth, cool guys.
Oh, the most.
And then, yeah, of course, Debbie Harry as well.
Yeah.
How did that come to be?
Same thing, except we met her. We hung out with Debbie and Ice-T one night about 20 years ago.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Were you fans of them?
Extremely cool. Yeah, for sure.
Well, life-changing, actually. When I was a kid and Debbie Harry did Saturday Night Live, you know, I thought that was just absolutely the most beautiful a human being could ever be or achieve. And I remember walking down corridor B and a bunch of the popular jock kids, you know, eighth graders or seventh graders, or whatever, were at the end of the hall. Somehow just knew they were going to be talking about it. I guess because Monday, you know, kids always talk about what was on Saturday Night Live. And they're like, oh, geez, oh, man, freak show. And I just slowed down and knew that from here on out, it was me against them.
And Frank Black from the Pixies.
He and I have been friends for 10 or 15 years. So that was just incidentally being on the phone with him in regards. He's a painter, and his guitar player, when he does Frank Black, is a good friend of mine whose wife is a somewhat famous Norwegian artist. And they were going to have a show in New York the week we were there. We were trying to get a dinner together with all of our New York favorite icons and friends. We're friends with the New York Dolls. Sylvain was, I think he had probably just passed. And, you know, there's just, we just want to get everyone still alive that we love and adore while we still can. He was in Zurich with four of his teenage sons on Pixies tour. He just gets a bus and put his sons on. I'm like, well, that's quite a commitment. And he said, you know, he said, Courtney, when you have four teenage boys, edification is everything. I said, well, are they Giger fans? And that same friend of mine with Chris Stein also happens to run the Giger estate. So I said, you know, he came back, I'll ask them. And he came back and said, well, that went over like gangbusters. what should I do? And I said, well, I'll email you with him right now. So they got, you know, tours of the estate and the mansion and the museum and everything. And he uttered those wonderful words to hear. Oh, thank you so much, Courtney. if there's ever anything I can do. So, you know, like,
as a matter of fact, there is.
Yeah. As you're hanging up, you're like, oh, wait, I got to call him back. And he was cool. He goes, yeah, my 14-year-old son is my recording engineer. And we could probably bang this out next time we're at a hotel. So that's how that happened. And even better, Peter in the band, our guitar player, is kind of the main engineer, recording engineer. And he sent the wrong song. We didn't know that until it came back. And that's what I said. I was like, oh my God, no. Because Danzig with Myself, that track started out as like a Danzig 4 kind of vibe. And as it evolved, it became more Pixies. And so I really wanted to get Charles on that one. And what Pete sent him was Love Thyself. And so that came back, and he didn't really do any solo or lead or thing. So it really wasn't feature, you know, it was just amazing textural, cool stuff that, of course, again, we're dealing with great artists that none of us have those chops or would think like that or could do that. So I had to call him up and go, did he send you the other one? And so we have him. So he said, yeah, just send it. I'll do it too.
Cool.
So thus, he's on Danzig with Myself as a feature, but he's also on on Love Thyself.
There you go. You got two for one by accident.
Unbelievable. Awesome. Yeah, I would never ask so much, particularly not of him. He's a very private person, and you know.
Well, it's really telling that you got all these, you know, hard to get people, you know. Tell us about Summer of Hate.
Well, that'll probably have to be a Courtney again there.
Well, boy, that one, if anybody thought 2020 was a summer of hate, and in Portland, Oregon, you know, we have the riots and the whole everything on top of the, God, this summer is going to be, you know, I think that song's going to have a comeback. It's going to get gross. It's going to get grosser, I should say.
We'll see.
Or it might be lovely.
I'd like to help you with your problems.
Problem.
Yes.
It's a more cynical.
One problem.
Well, there's multiple. I added an S.
It's far more cynical when it's just.
You want to help with just one.
I'd like to help you with your problem.
The main problem.
Yeah.
Or maybe even not even the main one.
Just the problem, whatever the problem is. That is about a specific person. So I don't really want to go. I don't want them to know who it is.
Forget it.
Yeah, you have people in your life and you like them, or you know, they're just part of your family. I've lived in the same town my entire life, never moved anywhere else.
Really?
And I'm a really, you know, I dig in deep and I'm just there. So I have a lot of the same, you know, friends that I had when I was 10.
But not the ones who didn't like Debbie Harry and Blondie.
Those were friends. No friends of mine.
They would have wanted to punch Courtney.
Oh, I.
How did you guys get together? I'm sure you're sick of telling this
we're
story.
We're cousins.
But I don't care.
We're cousins.
Yeah. So
are you really?
We've known each other for
that.
A long time.
Okay.
And then Peter and I started the band. He moved back from New York after college, but we had been friends in high school. We met, he was a sax player, woodwinds, probably played clarinet as well, and I was a percussionist in a symphonic camp for high school kids, Willamette University. And so that was the first time we met or knew, were aware of each other. We were new wavers, had high hair, eyeliner. I'm a year older than Pete, and so when I graduated, I was in a band called The Receivers. We played his high school's Christmas formal dance. He and his best friend, Adam Flick, who was a bass player. So Adam and I ended up playing in a bunch of bands together, moved out once we both graduated. He went on to work for Irving Azoff at Frontline Management and handled Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles. I obviously continued on and quit being a drummer, and I went into singing and songwriting, and he went into management in the digital world. And we're going to go hang out with him and do the Montreal food scene in a couple days.
Oh, cool.
The thing you do with your days off on tours, walk the streets of old towns eating their food and drinking their wine.
Have a nice meal.
Yes, that's always good. And a good drink. Did you guys always know you wanted to be musicians from the time you were little?
Since I was cognizant, I'd say so, yeah. 4 or 5
and you
years
always
old.
Knew drums?
Yeah, I was probably 4 or 5.
Kind of forced into drums because I kept banging my head against the wall. And my mom mentioned it to the doctor. Because I'd play the exact same song over and over. And
give me the Beach
donk,
Boys.
Donk my forehead to the rhythm against the headboard, so it'd go boy 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 boy. So after hours and hours of this, of seeing your 4-year-old doing this, you know, I have kids now, so I would definitely have been standing there in the doorway going, "This is something wrong here." Or you'd worry. So she mentions to the doctor, and he prescribed, because I don't think they had all those kinds of pills that everybody has now. He prescribed drums.
Really?
Yeah, he said he likes rhythm. Get him a drum set. And then I just sat there on that for like the next 12 years of my life.
It was give me the Beat Boys to fill my soul, want to get lost. And he was a huge Beach Boys fan as a little kid. So he thought the guy was saying, give me the Beach Boys to fill my soul.
I thought it was somebody singing about my favorite band. But
my first moment was also at 4, and it was Killer Queen. And I was, you know, little, and I remember looking up at all the grown-ups, and they didn't notice that this was different. You know, it wasn't, what was on, Barbra Streisand or something. You know, it wasn't what normally comes out of the radio, which is exactly the same as a chair, you know, or the cat, you know, but the radio. They were all things to a young mind. All points are equal on the continuum until you hear Killer Queen. And then all points are not equal on the continuum. This is something.
Alien.
What in the hell? I've never felt like this before. And I subsequently tried to, you know, I would stay up but pretend I'm going to sleep, which my parents must have been over the moon about that. And I'd, oh, he must be asleep already. Wow, he's tired. But I would get up and I'd just put my ear next to the radio and turn that dial and try to find out where that song is going to come out of again. And then I heard Radar Love. So I clearly found the classic rock station. KGON, Portland, Oregon. Still a station.
That's a life-changing tune.
So yeah. And I think I have an older brother. And then we had, of course, big kids that would babysit us. So I heard I must have put together that was what it feels like. The sound of that, what I feel, that must be what it feels like to be cool. Hmm. And that's sort of been a...
Well, you worked that out early. That is what it sounds like to... Still to this day.
Yeah, dude. Those songs are cool. They're really cool.
They make you feel cool.
Yeah.
And what side of the family, like, how are you guys related? Your mom's side or your dad's side? Or?
My dad, his mom. So early days, it was weddings and funerals that we'd see each other.
Yeah.
And Courtney always tripped me out. He'd show up with the wild, amazing suits and his hairstyle. And you know, he's like skinny with the makeup. And he always had to hold his head to the side because his hair would like go,
oh, that was
like,
a nice,
you know, yeah, right. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm, you know, a few years younger than Courtney, but just enough of a gap at that age for like an 11-year-old to be tripped out by this 16-year-old or, you know, whatever. That's what's our real cool cousin, you know. And also just very unusual guy, isn't he?
And how did you know, like, how did you get together and know what you guys were both musically inclined?
Well, at first his band opened for the Dandies, and then the DJ craze hit and our drummer just up and quit. And I remember Kurt Loder, we were watching MTV when the news came on, and it, MTV music news, and it said, Dandy Warhol's drummer has quit to pursue a career as DJ, his DJ name. And Loder goes, and he looks down at his paper and goes, he will be replaced by frontman Courtney Killer Taylor's cousin, Brent DeBoer. I don't think that's what anybody's girlfriend ever wants to hear come out of a news report. No.
He's leaving. That's basically what she said.
Yeah, he's your boyfriend's going leaving. On tour. He is going to be everywhere but home for the next several years, maybe forever.
That is basically what the lady said on TV.
You guys have been around a long time.
We have been around for a long time.
But not that long. The MTV generation. I don't know. Not that long ago. It is a long time ago, isn't it?
Those were special times. It was amazing that, you know, if you moved the slider on that new thing called cable TV that they had, 36 channels and all, and you know, NBC, CBS, ABC, those are 1, 2, 3, and 4. All the way at the ass end was 36. Was this
and turn the volume up.
The armpit cesspool of television called MTV. And it ended up dominating the world. It made what we do as important, if not more important, than sports stars, politicians, anybody. It was absolutely phenomenal. And we didn't have to, and you didn't have to be a pop star to be successful at that point. You could just be in a band that wanted to make what you thought was cool music, and then you would find your people that were similar to you all over the world, and you could have a lifelong career.
The 20th anniversary of your song, My God, the theme song from Veronica Mars. We used to be friends. Who's that about?
That is that's about Mark Chassie, a very tight friend of mine from mid-early teen years. And it was just this, I hadn't heard from him in many years. And I was busy, I was stressed out. I couldn't answer the phone. He called my friend again, Rich, I believe it was. I'm busy right now. And so Rich talked to him because we were all friends from being, 12, 13, 14 together. I was probably dealing with, here's how insular my home life is. That song, Mark Chassie, that song, that guy, I also wrote another song about on our first record called Ride, same guy. And Rich was roommates with my girlfriend at the time, Not If You're the Last Junkie on Earth.
He's the Patty Boyd of the Dandy Warhols.
I called Mark Chassie back and several times over the next week or two, and he never answered and never called me back. And I just thought, really? You can't even, the guy calls once in like 7 years and you can't be busy. Like,
You're like one of those guys, you have like a list of people that wronged you when you were 12.
And they're going to get a song written about him.
You got a song coming your way.
Oh my God, we did.
Buster.
Does he know you wrote a song about him?
I'm pretty, yeah. I just had breakfast with him a couple of weeks ago.
He finally got back to him.
Dude, I have the same, nothing changes. What, you mean things change in the world? I have the same friends I had when I was 12.
It is amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't need more friends.
I have two friends when I was 12. You have any friends when you were little?
Yeah. Pat Lawrence, he and I went to kindergarten together. We went to preschool together. Ms. Morton, every once in a while we demonstrate to others how we tie our shoes exactly the same way because we learned from the same teacher.
Do you make two loops?
Yeah. Just, yep, the two and then, yeah. I think so. I'd almost have to do it now, but right, we used to get down and just show people in our hands exactly the same. Ms. Morton.
They just go, wow.
You guys tie your shoes exactly the same way. That's what they were saying.
And you guys are touring right now. Like, what's the tour look like?
It's been going extremely well. I thought the shows have been fantastic. A couple in Canada, a couple Midwest gigs, and then L.A., I think.
Then Denver and L.A., yeah.
And in Indiana, man.
But yeah, I don't know what we'll do. I guess we'll probably play a local TV show, maybe go to a record store and play our gig and celebrate the release of our record.
And what do fans get when they see you play live?
Judging a massive concussion of rock and roll.
And judging from this, from the amount of smoke and what it, exactly the aroma is, I'd say they get pretty stoned.
You can get stoned just walking right outside.
I know I do. Yeah, we're a tripper stoner band. That is a fact.
Yeah, it's a psychedelic trip, man. That's the whole idea.
Make your crappy things that are dragging you down, make them go away for as long as you possibly can. Music is amazing like that. It's a transcendent experience, or it should be. I mean, it doesn't really matter what style, People don't have to think that the music you like is cool or beautiful or even valid. Music is this, what an abstraction. You can clunk, clunk, clank, clank. You put those sounds together in the right order, and people just feel better, or they start wigging out, their bodies start convulsing, and joy and happy bliss and everything. And at this point, probably half of all music I listen to is the Dandy Warhols. It just goes straight to the root of whatever the problem is, and I either don't have to think about it or I think about it and realize that it's fine when this music is on. That's what we've done for 30 years, is just try to make a tool for enlightenment or advancement, or making yourself comfortable enough to face your own lack of psycho-emotional growth or whatever your crap is. Everyone's got the same crap, but music is a unbelievable tool for you know, the self-help psychology oriented people, which our band are definitely that. That's what we're made of.
I love it. I love that. What's the first album you guys ever bought?
I was six or seven, maybe. I had heard Van Halen, that album, 1984. So how old was I? I guess I was more like 8 or 9. Just heard a song on the radio, and my dad took me to, I said, you know, do you have this record? And he's like, no.
No, JD did not have that record.
He pulled over and got that. And then at the same time, there was another song that he had heard. And he's like, oh, these guys are pretty good. So he got the Minute Work, that Land Down Under album. So those two came home on the same day. And I played the hell out of them. Just loved them. And my mom was really upset because there's a baby on the cover of the album smoking a cigarette. She thought that was so distasteful.
Yeah, no, she did. You know, Carol did not want to see any smoking in her household.
No, and especially not an infant wearing angel wings, because that's the album cover. But anyways, those two are the first. Those are the yes, first two that
I
ever
came home.
I never
even noticed that record cover.
Well, I probably wouldn't have either if Carol didn't mention it.
I was, of course, surrounded by a lot of babies in angel wings
smoking.
What was yours, Granny? First album you ever got?
God, I have no idea. Probably Kiss Alive.
Ah, that was mine, actually.
Yeah, it's a great record.
Or the Bay City Rollers. I can't remember. One of those. Bay City Rollers or Kiss.
That was it?
Yeah.
Get a little bit hot tonight. Apparently, Paul Stanley's Jersey or Queens, or where
the city, yeah.
Is now like, he's like, y'all want a good play? Here's some good rock and roll. Y'all gonna party tonight?
you should do impressions. That should be your next album. Just impressions. Do we talk about the new album enough?
I think so. Yeah. Talking about how it's heavy metal and what rocks. And did we mention
did
to go
like
and
Danzig?
Get it? Oh, we've got to mention that it comes out March 15th, I suppose.
I was just curious. Did you like Danzig and Billy Idol?
Yeah, I like Danzig. I mean, you have to like Danzig. He's just such an icon, and he's a singularity. You know, there's nobody else like him. And whether he's in the Misfits, which I didn't love his vocal, you know, the Doors over Good Charlotte, and then is it didn't work for me. But once, you know, obviously the world noticed him when Mother came out.
That's when I first noticed, and that video
the world. And he had really done it. He had really forged a sound and a thing around his thing. So many cool riffs and songs, and it's truly like adolescent. You know, he's still got the ears of a 14-year-old boy, and that's the key to being a great rocker.
Well, you certainly have that. You refer to, you know, those 12-year-old days a lot. So you have it too. You guys both have
fresh
it too.
fresh ears, yeah, impressionable,
yeah. I think it's so neat that your family and that you're like that. Like, what do your families think now? Were they supportive when you guys did
absolutely
this?
Yeah, my dad, both my parents, they would go to every concert within an hour's drive.
Wow.
At least that I ever played in any band. They never missed a Dandy's gig, even in Australia when they were timing their visit for one of our tours, you know. They could not have been any more supportive. They never said, oh yeah, well, that's good fun, you're gonna have to get a real job after that or whatever. Mm-hmm. I always just wanted to somehow make a living in music, and then this became the ultimate thing, and it was just a massive life-changing moment, of a little series of events, to be able to join up with Cousin Courtney and hit the road.
We had a European tour coming up. Of course, the stress was outrageous, and we have a bona fide hit, global hit at the time.
With 8 days to figure out how to do this.
Yep, you had to graduate from college early and hit the road. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, we had 8 days to get it all done. All the rehearsals, everything had to be done, and then just away we went.
And then it was just cobblestone, winding streets of Madrid and Paris. And Man, Vienna, it was rad. Those were really fun times. I mean, it's still fun. Life is, you know, great to go to these places and have these friends there that we've known for 25 years. That's super cool too.
Yeah.
I guess old friends are really important.
All right, guys, it's been so fun. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having. Oh my God, the Moe and Shandon. God, did I just do acid recently? I'm having all sorts of connections. Like after you do psychedelics and for like weeks after, you're going, oh my God, what a coincidence. You notice everything. Moe, she keeps a Moe and Shandon in a pretty cabin. Da, da, da. Killer Queen, my first song I ever noticed. That happens to be the champagne that you guys keep
that's
on hand here.
So cool.
The most rock and roll champagne ever because of that.
Why do they call you Fat Ed?
I used to have a really fat hairstyle.
Dude, it was like...
He used to?
It was like all over the show.
Oh, it was like that, those early 2000s years. It was
the biggest head.
Where's your drummer, big hip, fat head, whatever his name is? And we're like, Fat Ed, ooh. That works.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.